Imagine waking up, grabbing your coffee, you open up your digital library, and you realize hundreds of movies that you paid for have just vanished.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Yeah, it's just completely gone.
It's honestly terrifying. Welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. We are digging into the June 28th, 2026 edition of the Tech & Night Tech and Crypto Newsletter. And our mission today is to kind of unpack what I can only call the illusion of the digital economy.
Right, because all our traditional ideas about, you know, ownership and scarcity and value, they're just completely breaking down in this modern tech landscape.
They really are. It is mind-blowing how much we assume we own things that we actually don't.
Absolutely. The main theme we're seeing across all these sources is this massive friction between our like old school economic expectations and how modern digital infrastructure actually works.
Right.
Consumers are still operating under these 20th century assumptions about property rights. But the tech industry, I mean, they've completely moved on to this totally different legal framework.
Which is causing some incredibly expensive blind spots for regular people.
Well, massively.
So let's start with this whole Sony crisis. Tech & Night highlights this email that Sony sent to thousands of PlayStation Store users. Basically, on September 1st, 2026, 551 Studio Canal films are going to be permanently deleted from their libraries.
And we're not talking about obscure indie films here.
No. We're talking Terminator 2, Total Recall, Paddington, the Bridget Jones series, like cultural touchstones. And according to IGN, some users have spent over $500 building up these specific collections.
Just poof, gone.
Exactly. And Sony is offering zero compensation, none, all because a licensing contract with Studio Canal expired.
I mean, this forces us to really look at the vocabulary we use for digital commerce, right?
Yeah.
Every platform uses the word buy. There's a big buy button.
Right. It feels like a purchase.
But legally, it's completely divorced from actual purchasing. You aren't acquiring an asset. You are, well, you're buying a revocable license. Kotaku did a really deep analysis on this.
And what did they find?
Basically, that the entire industry is just a temporary licensing model. When you click buy, all you're doing is paying for a database flag on Sony's servers that says, yes, this specific account is allowed to stream this file for now.
It's such a deceptive interface. I was thinking about this. And it's honestly as if you went and bought a couch from IKEA, brought it home, and then like 3 years later, an IKEA employee sneaks into your house to repossess it.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Just because, sorry, our contract with the fabric supplier expired? Like,
right. And you're basically financing Hollywood server costs while you take on all the risk of their corporate contract disputes.
It's wild. But this isn't exactly new, is it?
No, not at all. The historical precedent shows this is literally standard operating procedure now. I mean, Apple removed purchased iTunes movies without warning back in 2019.
Right.
Amazon Prime did the same thing with videos in 2021. The Microsoft Store wiped out hundreds of Xbox 360 games in 2023.
Wow. Okay, so why is this Sony one such a big deal?
It's the sheer volume. 551 titles at once is the largest mass removal we've seen so far. Because you don't actually own the file, there's no legal way for you to keep access once the corporate deal falls apart.
The newsletter did mention, you know, buying physical Blu-rays or backing up files as a solution, but then they completely admit that the physical media market is basically dead anyway.
Yeah, studios just aren't pressing discs at volume anymore. We've been funneled into this pure rental economy, but it's just masquerading as ownership.
And that masquerade is probably going to cause some massive legal battles, right?
Definitely. Historically, ownership included the right of first sale. You could sell a DVD at a garage sale or leave it to your kids.
Right. Residual value.
Exactly. This revocable licensing model strips all of that away. The tech companies say it's necessary for modern economics, but regulators are really losing their patience. The sources point to Europe making the first move here, using GDPR.
Wait, GDPR? I thought that was just for, like, website cookies and data privacy.
Yeah. Well, it's also about data portability. If a platform holds the data of your purchases, European regulators might argue you have a right to port that data, meaning they'd have to give you a DRM-free downloadable copy if they ever terminate the service.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And we're also going to see some aggressive pushes in California regarding false advertising. They want to force platforms to label these transactions as temporary licenses right at checkout. Or, if they use the word buy, they have to provide an offline copy.
I really hope that happens. But there's this weird paradox here. Because if we don't actually own our digital goods, why on earth are we paying these massive premiums to guarantee we get them?
It's totally irrational.
Right. Like, the breakdown of physical ownership has somehow made people willing to pay more just for the promise of a download. Which brings us to the whole Grand Theft Auto 6 situation on eBay.
The secondary market for these digital game codes completely defies any kind of basic economic theory.
It really does. Mm-hmm. GTA 6 is a digital release. There is zero shortage. Anybody could just log on to the official PlayStation or Xbox store and buy the game for $80.
Yeah, infinite supply.
Exactly. But we have this absolute epidemic of eBay scalpers selling digital codes for $120. Plus $24 for shipping.
Shipping and email.
Yes. Digzerto even reported on a buyer who paid a $9 shipping fee literally just to have a code emailed to them. Vice is calling this FOMO disease.
It's a great term for it.
Yeah.
And the sources outline the mechanics of why this works. Part of it is lack of consumer information. Part is regional pricing stuff. But the biggest driver is fabricated urgency.
The fake scarcity.
Right. Sellers put only two left on an eBay listing for a file that can be reproduced infinitely. We actually saw this exact same thing with the Steam machine a while back. Official units were selling for $1,049, but scalpers on eBay were getting $3,200.
See, I really struggle to accept the psychological explanation for this.
How so?
I mean, I get FOMO, but is our evolutionary wiring really that easy to hack? Like, our ancestors spent 200,000 years panicking over actual scarce resources, like food and water.
Right.
Are we really using that exact same primal survival instinct to pay a shipping fee for an email just because a web page used red text to say, only two left?
We absolutely are. I mean, behavioral economics shows that a cognitive bypass is incredibly easy to trigger.
Really?
Yeah. Fabricated scarcity overrides logical decision-making almost instantly. Your amygdala processes threat and urgency way before your prefrontal cortex can step in and say, hey, wait, this is an infinite digital file.
Wow.
When a scalper manufactures that urgency, your brain just defaults to survival mode because historically, missing out on something scarce meant you might starve.
That is wild. So we're basically just glitching our own hardware at this point.
We are. And this psychological exploit, it's the foundation of so many modern tech markets. It's the exact same mechanic behind NFTs, crypto pump and dumps, those limited digital sneaker drops. Scarcity dictates premium value, even when it's mathematically impossible, as long as the consumer believes it's scarce.
And what's crazy is it's not just random scammers on eBay doing this. The biggest corporations in the world use this exact same manipulation.
Oh, for sure.
Like, look at the console war around GTA 6. Mm. IGN just dropped a huge report on pre-orders, and PlayStation 5 is crushing the Xbox Series X and S by an insane 6-to-1 ratio. Some analysts even say it's 8-to-1.
Right, and Microsoft is obviously trying to push back on that narrative. They told Push Square they're seeing record orders.
But the newsletter mentions analysts from Technobez who suspect Microsoft is kind of massaging the data there.
Yeah, conflating things. They think Microsoft is mixing actual standalone $80 game purchases with people just renewing their monthly Game Pass Ultimate subscriptions, since that includes day one access to the game.
Right, which completely obscures the actual market demand.
Definitely. A monthly sub is not an $80 point of sale commitment.
So let's talk about why PS5 is winning so hard. Obviously, they have a huge install base, right? Like 65 million PS5s compared to maybe 32 or 35 million Xboxes.
Plus stronger brand power in Europe and Japan.
And the legacy of GTA 5. But the really brilliant part seems to be Sony's marketing deal with Rockstar. They just paid to put the PlayStation logo at the very beginning of the GTA 6 trailers.
Honestly, that logo placement might be the most cost-effective marketing strategy of the entire decade.
So even though Xbox arguably has better hardware specs or, you know, the huge value of Game Pass, Sony essentially Jedi mind tricked the entire global market into thinking GTA 6 is the PlayStation game purely through a trailer logo.
They did, because when you lose mind share, you lose market share. Sony gets that consumers don't read spec sheets.
We really don't.
We rely on associative memory. So you watch the trailer for the biggest game of the decade, you see a PlayStation logo, and your brain just links them. If you're going to buy a console specifically for that game, you default to the hardware you've been subliminally conditioned to associate it with.
That is brilliant, but also kind of terrifying.
Ugh.
And the sources say this perception war might be the last one we ever see, right? Like, traditional consoles only have one generation left.
Yeah. The prediction is the next hardware generation launching around 2028 or 2029 will be the last major one.
Wow.
By 2035, traditional consoles are predicted to be just a niche collector's item, kind of like arcade cabinets today, because gaming is aggressively moving to phones, smart TVs, cloud streaming, and VR. So this huge 6-to-1 victory is basically Sony just claiming the throne of a dying empire.
Okay, so if the console wars are fought entirely on perception, let's pivot to a space where perception and value are literally the entire foundation, Web3 and crypto.
Right, moving from physical hardware to pure abstraction.
Exactly. And just to be super clear with you all listening, we are strictly analyzing the economic mechanics reported in the newsletter today. We are absolutely not taking sides in this highly polarized debate.
Yes, maintaining neutrality is key here because these two executives represent totally opposed philosophies on how digital assets should even work.
Right. So we have this massive clash between Ripple CEO Brad Garlinghouse and Michael Saylor of Strategy, which used to be MicroStrategy. Garlinghouse is out here predicting Bitcoin will hit $180,000 by late 2026, purely based on real-world adoption.
But he is extremely critical of Saylor's whole playbook.
Very. Strategy currently holds 452,000 Bitcoin. That's roughly $28 billion. And they got there using this crazy leveraged borrow-buy-repeat model.
Right. They issue corporate debt, sell preferred stock, use all that cash to buy more Bitcoin, and just hold it on their balance sheet.
But Garlinghouse says this is just institutional gambling and it hurts the whole crypto space. And it seems like he has a point because Bitcoin.com reported that Strategy's preferred stock ticker, STRC, actually fell 25% below par value.
And we should quickly explain what that means for the market. When a company issues a bond or preferred stock, it has a par value, say $100. That's the capital the investor put in, expecting a fixed return.
Right.
If that stock is suddenly trading at a 25% discount, it means investors are so desperate to get out of their position that they're willing to take a huge loss. It's a massive signal of lost institutional confidence in Strategy's ability to manage that debt against Bitcoin's volatility.
And Garlinghouse is saying this kind of strategy provides zero real-world utility. But then Saylor's fans argue that he's the boldest guy in the room, that Strategy is the biggest corporate holder of Bitcoin globally, and they're super profitable.
They also say Garlinghouse is just jealous of XRP's performance compared to Bitcoin.
Right, the classic tribalism. But stripping all that away, the broader consensus in the sources is that crypto is consolidating. They predict 90% of tokens are going to go to zero, leaving only the ones with actual utility.
Which perfectly transitions into the second big crypto story here, the existential crisis of DAOs, or decentralized autonomous organizations.
Yes. Gnosis DAO just concluded a vote on proposal GIP-151, and it passed with 215% of the quorum threshold.
It was a massive turnout.
Basically, it allows the 1.3 million eligible holders of their GNO token to just cash out. They can surrender their governance tokens for a proportional share of the DAO's massive treasury.
To really get why this matters, we have to look at the arbitrage here. The Gnosis DAO treasury holds about $223 million in Ethereum, stablecoins, and other assets.
Okay.
If you do the math, each GNO token represents a claim to roughly $170 from that treasury.
But the actual market price of the token is only $132.
Exactly. So a trader could just go buy a token for 132, surrender it to the DAO, and pull out 170 in hard assets.
Just instant profit. And because it's a DAO, there's no CEO to stop it.
Right. A smart contract handles the whole liquidation automatically. You send the token to an address, the code burns it so it's out of circulation, and then it automatically deposits your share of the treasury into your wallet.
Wait, I have to push back on this whole concept then, because the entire pitch of a DAO was supposed to be this revolutionary, decentralized, community-driven thing, right?
That's a pitch, yes.
But if they are just voting to liquidate the shared treasury and cash out their shares at a premium, haven't they basically just reinvented a traditional Wall Street hedge fund, but with like cooler Web3 branding?
You hit the nail on the head. The Defiant published a really sharp piece arguing exactly that. When you link a governance token directly to liquid assets, it stops being a long-term software protocol. It devolves into a short-term investment vehicle. I mean, if members have the option to vote for an immediate $38 profit per token, why would they ever fund a complex 5-year development roadmap? The incentive completely evaporates.
So code really can't rewrite basic human economic behavior.
It cannot. You just can't escape that traditional tension between a member's desire to cash out and the long-term survival of the institution. The experts are saying DAOs have to evolve immediately or die.
What does that evolution even look like?
Probably implementing traditional financial controls into the smart contract. So things like multi-year vesting periods where you literally can't touch the treasury funds right away, or using a two-tier token system that separates voting power from actual economic value.
Interesting. Well, we've spent a lot of time in the abstract today, renting movies we thought we owned, paying digital shipping fees, console mind tricks, DAOs cashing out. Is there anything in tech right now that is still grounded in physical reality?
Actually, yes. The newsletter had one really concrete piece of hardware news about the Switch 2.
Oh, thank God.
Arc System Works confirmed that Granblue Fantasy Versus Rising is officially launching on the Nintendo Switch 2 on September 17th, 2026.
Right, alongside the 2.60 update, which brings in the new DLC character Id. And this is actually the first time the Granblue franchise has ever been on a Nintendo platform.
But why is this specific fighting game our anchor to reality today?
Because of what it proves about the actual physical silicon. Fighting games are incredibly demanding. They operate on strict frame data. Every move is measured in 60ths of a second.
Okay.
The fact that a premier studio like Arc System Works is taking the Switch 2 seriously means the console finally has real processing power. Specifically, it supports a 120 Hz refresh rate.
I mean, I know 120 Hz looks a lot smoother on a TV, but mechanically, why does that matter for competitive gaming?
It's all about input latency. At a standard 60 Hz, one frame lasts roughly 16.6 milliseconds on screen.
If you double the refresh rate to 120 Hz, you cut that latency in half down to 8.3 milliseconds. In a fighting game where you have to visually recognize an attack and input a counter within a window of like three frames, that 8-millisecond difference is literally the difference between blocking a hit and losing a tournament.
Oh, wow. So actual physical hardware capabilities still dictate the market in this specific space. It's a rare win for reality.
Exactly. The Switch 2 finally has the raw power to rival ninth-generation consoles for competitive play.
So to wrap this up, the big takeaway here is that awareness is really the only way to navigate this landscape. The old rules of ownership and scarcity just don't apply anymore. We buy movies without seeing the license agreements, we pay premiums because we don't realize scarcity is fake, and we pick consoles based on associative branding.
Technical literacy isn't optional anymore. You have to understand the reality beneath the user interface.
And as we move deeper into this economy of revocable licenses, the concept of long-term value is just incredibly murky.
Which leaves us with a huge unresolved question about digital inheritance.
What do you mean?
Think about it. If our entire digital lives, our movies, game libraries, music, are legally just temporary rentals tied to a living person's account, what happens when we die? Those assets legally expire.
Wait, really?
Yes. We are approaching a demographic cliff where the next generation might be the first in human history to inherit absolutely zero physical media or digital property from their parents.
That is insane.
We are fundamentally rewriting generational wealth, replacing physical heirlooms with thousands of dollars of expired non-transferable database licenses.
Wow. Something for all of you listening to Chew On today. Definitely check the fine print the next time you click buy on a digital storefront. Thanks for joining this deep dive, and we will catch you on the next one.